So I spent the rest of the evening listening to old Morrison groaning and snarling and nearly puking with fear. I gathered from his vaporings that there had been recent riots in Glasgow and even in Trafalgar Square, and that there was to be a rally of Chartists on Kennington Common, and it was feared they would invade London itself. To my astonishment, when I went out next day to take my bearings, I discovered there was something in it. At Horse Guards, there were rumours that regiments were being brought secretly to town, special constables were being recruited, and the royal family were leaving town. It all sounded damn serious, and old Morrison had actually plucked up courage to go to Marlborough Street and test as a special constable. But on the morning of the great Chartist meeting at Kennington, though old Morrison set off to join the other specials, he was back in 10 minutes, having sprained his ankle, he said, and had to be helped to bed. I was sorry, because I'd been hoping he might get his head stove in, but it wouldn't have happened anyway. The Chartists did assemble, and the specials were mustered to guard the bridges. It was then that I saw Gladstone, but it poured down, everyone was soaked, the foreign agitators got nowhere, and all the mob did was to send a monstrous petition to the House of Commons. It had 5 million signatures, they said. I know it had 4 of mine. However, if my chief feeling was disappointment that so little mischief had been done, the demonstration had a great effect on my father-in-law. You'd hardly credit it, but he'd had much the same thought as myself, the amazing notion that I ought to go into Parliament. "It's your duty," cries he, sitting there in his nightcap with his ankle all bandaged up. "You should have a seat in the House." Me in Parliament? I loosed a huge guffaw. Do you think that would keep the Chartists at bay? At this, he let loose a great tirade about the parlourist state of the country and how it was everyone's duty to rally to the flag. Oddly enough, it reminded me of the kind of claptrap I'd heard from Bismarck, strong government and lashing the workers. "If yesterday's nonsense had convinced you we need a change at Westminster," says I, "why don't you stand yourself?" He glowered at me. "I'm nor the hero of Kabul, forby I've business enough to attend to, but you have nothing to hinder you. You're never tired of telling us what a favourite you are with the public. Here's your chance to make some of it." "You're out of your senses," says I. "Who would elect me?"
"Anybody," snaps he. "A pug ape frae the zoological gardens could win a seat in this country if it was managed right."
But when I came to think about it, you know, it didn't seem quite so foolish after all.
Flashy MP. Sir Harry Flashman, MP, perhaps. Lord Flash of Lightning, paymaster of the forces, with a seat in the cabinet, damn your eyes.
The more I thought of it, the better I liked it. Light work, plenty of spare time for as much depraved diversion as I could manage, and the chance to ram my opinions down the public's throat. The main thing was, it would be a quiet life. As you know, in spite of the published catalogue of my career, Victoria Cross, General Rank, 11 campaigns, I've always been an arrant coward. I'll never do harm to anyone if there's a chance he may harm me in return. The trouble is, no one would believe it to look at me. I've always been big and hearty, and looked the kind of chap who'd go 3 rounds with the town rough if he so much as stepped on my shadow. And from what Tom Hughes has written of me, you might imagine I was always ready for devilment. Aye. But as I've grown older, I've learned that devilment usually has to be paid for. And even in 48, at the ripe old age of 26, I'd seen enough sorrow from the Khyber to German dungeons by way of the Borneo jungles and the torture pits of Madagascar to convince me that I must never go looking for trouble again.